Greetings and welcome to Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. I'm Rob Hancock. This evening we bring you two great programs, Dimension X and The Lone Ranger. Here to bring them to you is Mike Amaro.
Thanks, Rob. And hi, guys and gals. Glad you could be here with us tonight. Tonight, we're going to listen to Dimension X, The Roads Must Roll, September 1st of 1950, starring Ralph Bell. We're going to follow that with The Lone Ranger, and the name of the program is Scott Burlington's Sacrifice, and that's from March 29th of 1954. Hope you guys enjoy.
Adventures in time and space, transcribed in future tense. Dimension X. Can you predict the future? Can you tell what will come in 100 years, or in 10, or in the next minute? Tonight, Dimension X brings you a glimpse of what may well happen within your own lifetime. The Robert Heinlein story, The Roads Must Roll.
Here's a run, watch them run. Oh, your job is never done, for our roadways go rolling along. While you ride, we are watching down inside, though your roadways keep rolling along. Oh, it's high, high heat, the rotor men are we. Check off the sectors, loud and strong. One, two! Anywhere you go, you are bound to know that your roadways keep rolling along.
Keep them rolling!
Your roadways keep rolling along.
It was in the middle 1950s that the automotive age began to die. The traffic engineers had long expected it. For years, they had watched our vast cities sprawl and spread out, spill over into the countryside, become more and more dependent on motor transportation. And then finally, the inevitable breaking point was reached. The growing flood of cars and buses and trucks began to swamp the streets and arterial highways. The building of roads could no longer keep pace. The superhighways clogged. Congested, became packed with cars stalled bumper to bumper, and the cities began to die of slow strangulation, for the traffic could no longer roll. And then the engineers took over. They banned the automobiles, tore up the superhighways, and in their place they built the rolling roads. Mechanized roads that moved like huge conveyor belts, whirling along on their giant rotors at speeds ranging from 5 to 100 miles an hour, carrying the freight, the food, and the people from city to city and coast to coast. An engineering miracle had changed the face of a nation. The automobiles and railroads vanished. The rolling roads had taken over all transportation. And no one worried over the fact that if the roads should ever stop, our whole economic life would stop. For the machinery had never failed yet. The machinery that rolled the roads was perfect. But people forgot that machinery depends on men, the men who run it.
All make the roads roll!
We do! We do!
That's right! The engineers! Not the supervisors, not the mechanic union, but the engineers! We're the brains of the roads! And where would the public be if we didn't keep those roads out there rolling? Right behind the eight ball, and everybody knows it. All right, then. We're the men who hold the power. And it's time we started using it.
Right.
We've called this meeting of the Engineers Control Committee because that's what we want to do, control.
Your time, boy.
Because I'm tired of taking orders from the Transport Commission, from slick desk jockeys like Jim Gaines, who don't even know a rotor bearing from a field car. Let Gaines yammer about our duty to the public. That's a lot of eyewash. We've got the power, and we're the men that count. It's time we quit fiddling around and use the little direct action to get what we want.
Let's go! Let's go!
Mr. Kerr!
The chair recognizes Brother Harvey of a transport mechanics unit.
Thanks, boys. I don't rightly belong here since I'm no engineer. I'm just here to represent the workers' union. But I want to know what's all the shooting for. You engineers have got better working conditions than we have, and we ain't kicking. You say you engineers are powerful. You say you can tie up the road.
That's right.
Well, listen. So can any screwball with a jar of nitroglycerin.
Hey, what's eating him?
Yeah, and he don't need no engineering degree neither.
Harvey, are you speaking for your union now? Or are you here as a stooge for the transport commission?
Listen, I helped found my union, and I led the strike in 75 for decent working conditions. Where were you engineers then, huh? With the thing!
Remember, you're only a guest at this meeting. Go on, man.
Now, listen, man. I'm one of the old engineers on the road. You all are. Worked up the hard way. We didn't go to the fancy technical institutes like those young punk cadets the commissioner's training to take over our jobs.
That's
right, man. Jim Gaines, don't fill us full of the old school spirit and that baloney about how the roads must roll. So, all right, then. Why don't we get smart for a change? What would happen if the roads stopped rolling? Maybe the country would begin to realize that they can't do without us. And maybe we'd begin to get the things we want. The roads must roll!
Yes?
Your wife is calling, Mr. Gaines.
All right, put her on.
I want you to stop off on your way home.
I'm sorry, darling. I can't make it.
Oh, but you promised.
Yes, I know, but Washington called in. They're sending Evans, the Australian Minister of Transport, through my sector today. I've got to show him through personally.
Well, can't somebody else?
Well, I'm chief supervisor. It wouldn't be courteous.
Darling, courtesy begins at home. I've planned this dinner for weeks.
Honey, the roads must roll.
Jim, if you quote that nauseating slogan at me again, I'll divorce you.
Well, I can't help it, darling. I tell you, I'll meet you at Stockton at 9. We'll take in a show.
Yes.
Kiss Alan goodnight for me.
All right, dear. Goodbye.
Bye, darling.
Mr. Evans is here.
Send him in.
Go right in, sir.
Well, good evening, Mr. Evans. I'm Gaines, chief engineer.
How do you do, Mr. Gaines?
Won't you sit down?
Thank you. They told me at the embassy you'd be the man to see.
Oh?
I want to know how the roads work.
I think we can handle that.
I'm not a technical man, Mr. Gaines. My field is sociology. And suppose you tell me about the roads as if I were entirely ignorant.
Well, fine, fine. Well, it's nearly dinner time. Suppose we run up to Stockton sector for dinner.
All right.
Take us about an hour on the roads, and you can see them working.
Excellent.
If you'll excuse me for a minute.
Of course.
Hi, Chief. What can I do for you?
Oh, Dave, you're on the evening watch, huh? Where's Van Cleek?
Oh, I'm going to some meeting.
I'm going up to Stockton for dinner. Anything to report?
No, sir. Rolling.
Okay, keep them rolling. All right, Mr. Evans, let's go. This here is the low-speed strip. You ever ridden a conveyor before?
No.
That's quite simple. Remember to face the motion of the strip as you get on. Well, that's it.
All right.
We'll go right across here. Each adjoining strip is a few miles an hour faster than the one next to it.
I see.
Freight is carried on the 50-mile strip. Most passenger traffic is on the express strip.
Oh, yeah.
All right, now, watch your step.
All right.
Here we are, maximum speed.
100 miles an hour. Amazing.
This strip makes a round trip San Diego to Reno in 12 hours.
Oh.
Oh, here's the restaurant. Ready to eat?
Is this a restaurant?
There's a sign, Jake's Steakhouse, fastest meal on the road.
Is it really a proper restaurant?
Yeah, well, the best. Hooked right into the moving strip, of course. Shall we go in?
Oh, hello, hello there.
regular, Mr. Gaines. We don't see much of you out on the road.
Well, busy in the office, Jay.
Oh, two, right this way.
Thank you.
Here they are. Now, what'll it be?
Well, you order, Jay.
Well, how about a steak? 2 inches thick from a steer that died happy.
Oh, that's fine. Plug me in the intercom, will you, Jay?
Sure, there's a talk box right next to you.
Blank two, Ryan.
If you'll excuse me, Mr. Evans.
Davidson on watch.
This is the chief, Davidson. I'm at Jake's Steakhouse. You can reach me at 10L66.
10L66, right.
There now. They can get a hold of me in an emergency now.
Mr. Gaines, what kind of an emergency could there be?
Well, two principally. Power failure on the rotors would bring the road to a standstill.
Mm-hmm.
If that happened during rush hour, we'd have to evacuate millions of people.
Well, as many as that?
Oh, yes, easily. There are 12 million people dependent on this section of road. Gaines here.
Hello, Chief. David. I just got the hourly report in.
Proceed.
Could that engineer Gunther, while on watch, was found playing cards with C.J. Ross, technician on duty?
Any damage?
One rotor running hot, but still synchronized. It was jacked down and replaced.
All right. Have the paymaster give Ross his time. Turn him over to civil authorities. Place Cadet Gunther under arrest. Bring him to Road Town Central.
Yes, sir.
All right. Keep him rolling. As I was saying, Evans, there are two possibilities of danger. Can you visualize what would happen if the strip under us would break?
I haven't thought of that. You don't realize you're traveling at 100 miles an hour.
Well, it can't break, not now. The strip has a safety factor of over 12 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
This is good soup, Jake.
Thank you, Mr. Gaines.
But you know, Evans, a break did happen once in the early days. That was on the Philadelphia-Jersey City Road.
Dear me, no.
That's right. The strip wasn't much more than a conveyor belt then. You know, it buckled for miles, crushing passengers against the roof. Yeah. Forward section in front of the brake spilled them down under into the rotors and the rollers.
Was it very bad?
Over 3,000 people were killed in that break. But, Evans, the roads had to go on. You know, the entire economic system hangs on the roads. They stop now, the country would starve.
Isn't it possible that you've become too dependent on these roads, Mr. Gaines? For example, what if you had a strike?
We had a strike back in 75, but... Well, there's not much danger of that anymore.
Oh, why not?
Every cadet that goes to work on the roads today is a graduate of the United States Transport Academy.
Oh, I see.
They're all picked men, screened for emotional stability. They're trained to give us the same kind of loyalty that Annapolis and West Point develop in their men.
You're a graduate, I suppose, Mr. Gaines?
No, I was too old for that. The academy wasn't set up till after the strike in 75. But it won't be long now, maybe 5 or 10 years, Evans, before the oldest engineer on the roads is a man who's been through that academy. Now, Gaines, sir.
Davidson, Chief, there's trouble in Sacramento, Sanger.
What is it? What's happening?
Emergency stop. Hello. Hello, Davidson. The phones must be out. Come on. Jake!
What's the matter?
Have everybody stay in the restroom, Jake.
What's that?
Probably somebody stepped onto the next strip. Got cut to ribbons. There'll be plenty of casualties. Jake, where's your getaway hatch?
In the pantry.
Well, how am I going to help those people?
I've got the whole road to think of. Now, don't bother me. Give me a hand, Jake. This hatch is stuck
here.
All right, if you're coming with me, Mr. Evans,
all
you've
right.
got to move fast. I haven't got any time to waste. Freeway on top of the inner road ceiling.
No.
That's the outer shell over us there.
But are we going outside?
No, there'll be an access down manhole over here. They're spaced every 100 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's there by the green light.
I got you.
Oh. All right, this will get us down on the northbound road. Careful now, it's dark.
All right.
Stand away from that door, Evan.
But this road is still rolling.
Yeah, so it is. It was only the 100-mile strip that stopped. There's what I want, a phone booth. Look out, Evans. Excuse me, will you?
Hey.
Out.
I'm talking to my wife. What?
Don't argue.
I'll...
Emergency priority. Division office.
Davidson?
Gaines here. Report.
Chief, where you been? I've been calling...
Never mind that report.
709 report. Strip 20 past emergency level. Interlocks acted and cut the strip out.
Cause of failure unknown. Direct communication to Sacramento. Control office out. Evacuation of Strip 20 commenced. No casualties.
There are casualties. I saw them. Put police and hospital routine A into operation. Get me Van Cleek. I want him to take over for me till I report in.
We can't reach him, Chief. Shall I cut out the rest of the road?
No, keep those other strips rolling or we'll have a traffic jam the devil himself couldn't untangle. There are 5 million passengers on that road now. Notify the governor that I've assumed emergency authority. Arm all cadets available and await orders.
Shall I recall technicians off watch?
No, this isn't an engineering failure, man. That whole sector went out simultaneously. Somebody cut those rotors by hand. Now, I want all available senior class cadets to report to Stockton Subsector Office 10 with pistols and tear gas.
Yes, sir. The governor wants to talk to you. He called in.
Refer him to somebody else. I'm busy. I'll get back to you. I'm going down under. You can't hear without an anti-noise filter. All right, come on.
What are we looking for?
A recon car. There should be one here.
Are those the rotors?
Yeah, the big ones are rotors. They drive the road. The little ones are rollers. They give continuous support.
I see.
Oh, there's a watch gang now, jacking down a rotor.
Can they hear us?
No, the noise filter works on a 4-foot radius. I'll flash them. He sees the light. We
find the is that posted reporting, sir?
I want your recon car, emergency.
Yes, sir. Right over here, sir.
Come on, Evans. Get in.
Well, it's so small.
Well, you fit. All right. Now, hang on. She accelerates like a rocket.
Oh, my stomach.
Relay station.
This is Gaines. Get me Davidson, senior watch officer.
Mr. Gaines, the mayor wants to talk.
I haven't got time. Get me Davidson. Leave this circuit hooked into Davidson's board until I tell you to cut it.
Yes, sir. Here's the senior watch officer.
Davidson.
Gaines calling. Have you found out yet what's stopping the roads?
No, sir. It's still a mystery to me.
All right. I'm on my way in a recon car. Hold everything till I get there.
Reporting, sir. Three platoons of cadet engineers standing by with tumblebug motorcycles.
Are they armed?
Pistols and tear gas is ordered.
All right, good.
Assistant Supervisor Van Cleek is calling you on Circuit 9.
Well, it's about time. Cut me in.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Van. Where are you?
Sacramento office. Now, listen.
Sacramento, that's good. Report.
In a pig's eye.
What?
I'm not your deputy anymore, Gaines.
Van, what are you talking about?
Now, don't interrupt me and you'll find out. It's true, Gaines. I've been picked as director of the Engineers Control Committee. We're taking over.
Have you gone off your rotor?
You can't start Strip 20 until I'm ready to let you.
Van!
I can stop the whole road if I have to.
Van Cleek, I'll call in the Army.
How'll you get them here if the roads aren't rolling, eh? Listen, Gaines, whoever controls the roads controls the country. And right now, that happens to be me. Sign off, Gaines. I've got to call the White House. You behave yourself. You won't get hurt.
I don't believe it, sir.
He's got us, Edmonds. If we go in and blast him out, he may wreck the road. What's your rolling tonnage now?
53% under evening peak, sir.
How about Strip 20?
Almost evacuated.
Yeah. Listen in on this, Davidson.
Standing by, Chief.
I'm going down inside with these cadets. We're going to work north, overcoming any resistance that we may meet. The watch technicians and maintenance crews are to follow behind us. Each rotor, as they come to it, is to be cut out from under Sacramento's control, then hooked into the Stockton control board. You understand?
Got it.
Check.
If it works right, we can move control of Sacramento sector right out from under Van's feet. He can stay in his office there till he's hungry enough to be reasonable. Edmonds, get me a pistol.
Now, Mr. Gaines, there's a man here, and he's badly hurt. He wants to see you.
Take care of him. I haven't got time to...
He's from Sacramento sector.
What?
Sir.
Send him in here.
Mr. Gaines.
Take it easy.
Mr. Gaines.
You're Harvey from the mechanic show, you know.
Tried to warn you. Tried to get away. He shot me. Three times.
Get a doctor, will you? All right, now. Easy, Harvey. Harvey, how long has this been building up?
It isn't the men. It's the engineers. I told them they were crazy. Told them the road's got to roll. And when I tried to get away...
Easy now.
Bleeding from the mouth.
Harvey. Harvey? Can you hear me?
He's dead, Mr. Gaines.
Come on, Edmonds. We better move. All right, you men. You saw Harvey brought in. How many of you want a chance to kill the louse that did it? All right, men. Anybody who hasn't got his mind on his job will be in the way. Now, here's the order. We move north, mounted on tumblebugs. We're going to try to regain control, rotor by rotor, before Sacramento sector knows what we're moving. Now, we've got to capture any watch personnel we run on before they can get word back, you understand? Men, surprise is vital. Use tear gas when possible. Shoot only when necessary.
Harvey.
But get them before they can reach a phone, Jack.
Can you hear me?
Any questions? No? Then move out. What's the score, Edmonds?
33 prisons so far. No one killed.
Crook. For years since I rode one of these tumblebugs. Forgotten how to steer it.
There's a man ahead. There at the rotor base.
Yeah, he's got a phone jacked in. Hurry. If he gets word back, we're sunk.
I don't think he's seen us. I'll dismount and get him.
All right.
Halt! We're out fire!
Quick, he sees us.
Come here, you.
Look out, he's got a gun.
I got him, sir. I got him.
Grab his gun. Yeah, he had an intercom jacked in, all right. If he's got through to Sacramento office, it's going to be tough.
I don't know, sir. Maybe he can get the call through.
Listen.
The road.
Take off your noise filter. There. It's a road. The road is stopping. Halt your men.
Halt. Hold up there. Hold up.
Edmonds, there's a recon car coming up.
Relay station call for Mr. Gaines and the recon speaker.
Give it to me.
Here you are, sir.
Gaines here.
Davidson here, Chief. Van Cleek's calling you.
Who stopped the road?
He did.
Oh, he did he? All right, cut Van Cleek into me.
You thought I was falling, eh, Gaines? What do you think now?
All right, Van. The road has stopped. You've won this trick.
Then why don't you get smart and give up? You can't win.
You forgot something, Van. You can't lick the whole country.
Yeah? Gaines, I've got a switch button in my hand. If I push it, it'll blow 300 yards straight across the road. And then for good measure, I'll take an axe and wreck the control station before I leave.
That's pretty drastic, Van.
Yeah? If I blow this charge in the middle of Sacramento sector, it'll get an awful lot of people. There are plenty of shopkeepers still on Strip 20. That row of apartment houses next to the road will go.
Now, look, Van, you don't want to blow the road, neither do I. Suppose, Van, I come up to your headquarters and we talk this over. Two reasonable men ought to be able to make a settlement.
Is this some kind of a trick?
I'll come alone, unarmed. My men will stay here.
All right. All right, Gaines. But one long rope and I blow the road.
Well, we've got to hurry, Dave. If I take too long, Van Cleek will get edgy and set off that charge.
I can't understand it. The psych tests are rigid. We've never had a failure in the Hum-Wadsworth-Burton method. Then, suddenly, a whole sector goes sour. How could Van Cleek get a whole crew of psych-cleared men to revolt?
It's easy, Dave. As my deputy, he was ex officio personnel officer for the whole road. He must have been faking psych records for years, transferring maladjusted men into his sector.
I've got that personnel record, Mr. Gaines.
Oh, thank you. This is Van's record here. Masked introvert, inferiority rating 7, and comment... In spite of potential instability shown on Wadsworth Curve, this officer is especially adept in handling men. He's adept, all right. I haven't got time for any more, Dave.
Chief, are you actually going up there to Van Cleek's office?
I've got to.
They'll be armed. They'll kill you.
I've got to take that chance.
Why don't you call in the army? He won't dare blow the road then.
Yes, he would. Look at that psych record there. He's putting up a big, brave front, but he's rotten inside. He wants to be taken seriously. He wants everybody to think he's the most dangerous man in this country. If I call the army in, he'll try to prove it by blowing the road.
But how can you stop him, Mr. Gaines? He'll have a gun. What'll you have?
What'll I have? Only a prayer. And what I know about Mr. Van Cleek.
Gaines. Director Van Cleek will see you now.
Gaines, I want you to sign this now. The declaration of your recognition of the Engineers Control Committee. You've got 1 minute to sign it, Gaines, or I'll push this button and blow up the whole sector.
You better sign, Gaines.
You need this gorilla with the gun, Van?
Why, you...
Can't you handle one unarmed man alone?
All right, Harry, out.
But...
Out, out.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Now sign. What's so funny?
You are, Van. You start a revolution because you think the engineers should control the road. Then when you've got control, the only thing you can think of to do is to blow it up. That's kind of silly, isn't it?
All right.
Tell me what you're so scared.
I'm not scared.
Yeah, sitting there sweating all over that push button that you're holding. If your buddies knew how afraid you were, they'd probably throw you into the rotor.
I'm not afraid.
You're afraid of me right now, Van. You're afraid I'll have you on the carpet.
You've got 1 minute to find.
You're afraid the cadets won't salute you. You're afraid that they're laughing at you behind your back.
No, I'm not. You keep quiet now. I've got a gun here.
Yeah, you're afraid of using the wrong fork at dinner. You're afraid people are looking at you, Van, laughing at
you. I am not. You dirty, stuck-up snob. Just because you went to a hi-hat school, you think you're better than everybody, huh? You and your crummy little gold-braid cadet.
Van, you're a pathetic little shrimp. I understand you perfectly, Van. You're a third-rater. All your life, you've been afraid that someone would send you to the foot of the class, so you right out on your ear where you belong. I don't want to look at you anymore.
I'll show you. I'll put a bullet in you.
Put down that pop gun before you hurt yourself.
Don't you come near me now. Don't you come near... I'll shoot now.
Give me that, Van.
No, let me go, will you?
Give me that pistol.
Yeah. I thought if I wounded your little ego, you'd forget to push that button and pull a trigger instead.
I'm not afraid.
I'm afraid you'll never make a good executive, Van. They have to know when to punch buttons.
Davidson.
Gaines here.
Chief, are you all right?
I'm all right. Attack now, Davidson. Mop up. I'll hold the control room. I've got Van Cleek. I think his little revolution is just about over.
Mr. Gaines.
Oh, Mr. Evans, I forgot about you.
I've been waiting at the sector office.
Yes?
Is everything under control?
Yes, all's rolling. Those are the watch engineers going under to check Sacramento sector inch by inch now.
Remarkable organization, remarkable.
Oh, thank you.
Hourly's in, Chief. San Diego Circle rolling. Bakersfield, Fresno, Stockton.
Stockton, oh. No.
What's the matter, Chief?
With trouble, Mr. Gaines?
There sure is. I promised to meet my wife at Stockton for a show. She's been waiting there since 9 o'clock last night.
Oh, dear me.
Dave, see if you can get her for me. Try the sector office.
All right, Chief.
And Dave... see if you can calm her down.
Oh, sure, Chief, sure. I'll tell her the roads must roll.
No, don't tell her that. I don't think she'd appreciate that. She's heard it too often. Well, I better get going. Bye, Dave. Keep them rolling.
Rolling along, keep them rolling. And the roadways go rolling along.
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future, the world of Dimension X. Next week, the strange story of the test pilot who became the first man ever to invade outer space, and of what he found when he got there. Listen next week to The Outer Limit. Tonight's adventures in Dimension X, The Roads Must Roll, was written by Robert Heinlein and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Wendell Holmes as Gaines and Ralph Bell as Van Cleek. Your host was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman. Engineer Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King.
Well, did you like that one? That was a classic Ralph Bell performance. And now, moving on, let's listen to The Lone Ranger from March 29th of 1954, Scott Burlington's Sacrifice. And this is starring the late Fred Foy.
Horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo silver, the Lone Ranger. Faithful Indian companion Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains, led the fight for law and order in the early western United States. Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again.
Come on, Silver. Let's go, big fella. I'll Silver.
Away! Burley Scott rode the trail toward Pecos with his companion, Luke Baker. Burley, recently released from prison, was tough and hard. As they rode, he spoke grimly.
Should have heard the warden giving out with a lot of gab about getting a fresh start, Luke. Fool thinks I'm going to forget those 3 years of hard labor and go straight. That's a laugh.
Got any plans, Burley?
Yeah. Yeah, I got plans.
Maybe you could get another gang together and we can...
That'll come later, Luke.
What are you figuring on doing in the meantime?
Something I've thought about for some time. Let me show you something. Ho!
Ho,
ho,
ho, ho, ho, hold on.
Here. Look at this.
Well, what do you know? Nobody would suspect you'd be wearing a fancy gold locket on a gold chain under your shirt.
Listen, Luke, if you want to make jokes, I'll blow
your... Now, take it easy, Burley. It's no use getting riled at me for nothing. I surprised to see you have something like that, that's all.
I don't like to be laughed at, you savvy?
Sure, sure. What about the locket?
I'll open it. Look.
Hey. It's sure a mighty pretty little girl. Pretty woman, too. Who are they?
My wife and kid. Huh? The young one was 2 years old then. That was 10 years ago.
Oh? Where are they now, you know?
My wife left me when she found out I was an outlaw and took the girl, little Sally, with her. I never saw them again.
It was tough.
Yeah. Get up.
Get up. Come on. Why did you show me that, Burley? What's it got to do with you're not starting another gang right now?
Plenty. After she divorced me, my wife married someone else. And an hombre named Fairfield who owns a ranch near Pecos.
Huh. You don't figure on stopping in to see him after all these years, do you?
Listen, Luke. An old pal of mine was brought to the prison a couple of months ago. He told me my former wife was dead. Died last year. He also told me Jack Fairfield was worth plenty. The ranch he owns, the Bar F, is mighty prosperous.
Well, what's that to you?
My pal found out that Fairfield thinks the world of Sally. She's 12 years old now. I figure she thinks he's her real father.
Well, that's all good for the youngsters, I see.
Now, maybe it is. But I aim to make Jack Fairfield pay plenty for me to keep my mouth shut.
And what if he doesn't?
I'll tell Sally the truth. And if that doesn't work, well, I'll find some other way to make him pay off.
Oh, come on. Burley, give up this loco idea. We get to Pecos, I can get some hombres together and we can form
a... My mind's made up, Luke. No use trying to talk me out of it. Now, let's get a move on. Get up there. Come on. Huh.
A few miles from Pecos, the Lone Ranger and his Indian companion, Tonto, rode leisurely along the trail that bordered the Bar F Ranch.
Look, Kimasabe. Little squaw and pony waiting near entrance to ranch.
She's already seen us, Tonto. I hope my mask doesn't frighten her.
Hello, mister.
Hello, little girl. Who's there?
My name's Sally, and I live here. Are you an outlaw?
No, Sally. We're not outlaws. You needn't be frightened.
Oh, I'm not frightened. Why do you wear that mask, mister?
I have my reason, Sally. Maybe if we meet again sometime, I'll tell you.
Good. Aren't you afraid of that Indian?
Tonto is my friend. A very close and loyal friend.
That right, Sally. Him not need be afraid of me.
You must be a good Indian. Daddy Jack says there are good Indians and bad ones. Just like there are good white men and bad ones.
That's right. Who's Daddy Jack?
Daddy Jack Fairfield. He's my adopted father, and he owns the Bar F Ranch.
Oh, I've heard of him. That's a fine pony you have, Sally.
Daddy Jack gave him to me for my birthday. He gives me lots of nice presents. Today's my birthday. I'm 12 years old.
Well, happy birthday. Did he give you that nice gold locket and chain, too?
Oh, no. Mama gave me that before she died. She told me my real daddy has one just like it. See? It opens. There's a picture of Mommy and me when I was 2 years old.
Well, your mother was very pretty. You look very much like her.
You think I'm pretty?
Of course.
Ah, you very pretty, little girl.
Golly, thanks. I think you're both handsome. Honest.
Kimasabe, her get along all right when I grow up, huh?
Yes, Tonto. We might ride this way in about 6 years and see if Sally still thinks we're so handsome.
You're joking with me. But I hope I'll see you again soon. And then you'll tell me about the mask.
I'm sure we'll see you again, Sally.
Well, I have to go now. I'm having a birthday party this afternoon. Goodbye, mister. Goodbye, Tonto.
Goodbye, Sally.
Get up,
buddy.
Get up.
Oh, her nice little girl.
Yes, she is, and well-mannered. It's evident she's been brought up in the atmosphere of affection and security every child needs. Come on, Silver.
Come on, come.
The following morning, Burley Scott, leaving Luke in town with his friends, rode to the Bar F Ranch to talk to Jack Fairfield.
Oh, Burley! Oh.
As he drew rein before the large, comfortable-looking ranch house, he was filled with bitterness and determination.
Steady.
Burley stood waiting a moment. Then the door was opened by a kind-faced, motherly-looking woman.
Good morning, sir.
Morning. I came to talk to Jack Fairfield. It's important.
Oh, I'm sorry, but Mr. Fairfield left on the early stage for Stockton on business. I'm Mrs. Atkins, the housekeeper. Can I help you?
Nope. When will Fairfield be back?
Oh, he'll return on the noon stage tomorrow.
Are you married to Mr. Fairfield? I know his wife died last year, but maybe he...
Sakes, no. As I told you, my name is Atkins, and I'm just the housekeeper. You know, between you and me, I think Jack Fairfield was too much in love with his wife ever to marry again.
Oh.
I'm mighty lucky in a way. Being a widow, I jumped at the chance to come here and sort of look after things for Mr. Fairfield, the poor man. Ah, 'twas quite a blow to him, losing that sweet wife of his and them having little Sally to raise.
Sally? Oh, yeah.
She's his little girl, you know. Mm-hmm. Pretty as a picture and sweet as can be. He's like putty in her hands. but so are all the others around here.
The girl, she likes her father a lot,
Oh, just crazy about him, and no wonder. She's the apple of his eye, and he's always doing things for her and buying her presents. If you want to leave your name, I'll tell him you were here.
Never mind. I'll come back tomorrow afternoon. Goodbye, ma'am.
Goodbye, sir.
As Burley walked toward his horse, Sally ran around the house.
Hello, mister.
Hello. Who are you?
I live here. I'm Sally Fairfield.
Oh, so you're Sally, huh? You look just like your mom.
Oh, you knew Mama?
Yeah, I met her once.
Why are you scowling like that? Are you mad at somebody?
No, I ain't mad.
Daddy Jack says being mad never helps anybody.
Daddy Jack?
Uh-huh. That's my adopted father. That's why I call him Daddy Jack. Mama told me my real father was the only one I should call Daddy.
She told you that?
Uh-huh.
What else did she tell you? About your real father, I mean.
Well, she said he went to the war and died a hero when I was 2 years old. Of course, I don't remember him, but I know he was brave and handsome and would have been good to me, just like Daddy Jack is.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon he would have been at that. You must think a lot of Mr. Fairfield.
Uh-huh. Are you a friend of Daddy Jack's?
Well, not exactly. I came to see about a job, you might say.
I'd like if you came to work for Daddy Jack.
Well, you would?
Uh-huh. I like you. Now that you're not scowling, you look real kind and sort of sad. What's your name, mister?
Well, tell me first, what was your real father's name? Do you know?
I just know him as Daddy. Mama never told me his other name.
Oh, well my name's... just call me Scotty.
All right, Mr. Scotty. Maybe if you come to see Daddy Jack when he gets home, I'll see you again. You'll like him a lot.
Yeah, sure. Well, I gotta go on to town now, Sally. Steady.
You will come back.
Maybe. Be a good girl, Sally. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get up.
That morning at the Pecos Cafe, Burley's friend Luke sat talking to two cronies.
I met Burley Scott at the prison and rode here with him, hoping he'd get together with us as a gang right away. But he has a deal he wants to pull first. I told him to forget it, but he's a stubborn hombre.
Listen, Luke, the job I got lined up won't wait.
What is it, Whiskers?
I got talking to some cowpokes in here last night. They were drinking quite a bit and got to yapping about their boss closing a deal in Stockton today for $20,000 in cash. He's bringing that cash back with him on the stage tomorrow.
That's right, Luke. I heard it, too. He took his foreman with him.
Joe and I figure we could hold up the stage tomorrow and grab that dough. But we ought to have two more gun hands. We're willing to divide equal.
Maybe when Burley gets back, I can talk him into going with us. He ought to know before tomorrow how his deal with Fairfield at the bar referential will turn out.
Did you say he went to make a deal with Fairfield?
Yeah.
That's the name of the rancher who's bringing the cash on the stage tomorrow.
What?
He left for Stockton this morning.
That's right.
And Burley won't get to see him like he planned. Now, listen. Don't mention Fairfield's name to Burley. He doesn't know him by sight.
Why? What's the difference if we mention it?
Burley might figure it'd spoil his private deal with Fairfield later. When Burley gets back to town, I'll talk him into going with us tomorrow. We'll hold up the stage and grab that $20,000.
The curtain falls on the first act of our Lone Ranger adventure. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments. To continue. While Luke, Whiskers, and Joe planned the stage robbery, Burley Scott rode back to town from his visit to the Bar F Ranch. He had been greatly moved by his meeting with his daughter, Sally, and her words had taken the bitterness from his heart.
Oh, hold there. Oh, steady.
When he finally reached town and met Luke and his two friends in the cafe, Burley had come to a decision.
Well, here's Burley now. Sit down, Burley.
Sure.
Meet my friends, Whiskers and Joe. Fellas, this is Burley.
How are you? Howdy, Burley.
How'd you make out?
Luke, I'm taking your advice. I'm forgetting the whole thing.
Good. Glad to hear it. Burley, we got a job lined up for tomorrow, and we're counting you in.
Suits me, whatever it is. And we'll leave here and head into New Mexico territory. Now tell me what it is you have in mind.
The following morning, Tonto went into Pecos for supplies. When he returned later, he brought news of interest.
Oh, Scott, oh, Father. Easy, Scott, easy.
I've been waiting for you, Tonto. We'll break camp this morning
wait,
and run.
Sabi. Me see two men. We get handbill bout in El Paso. One fella tall, wear whiskers. Other stocky.
You saw them in town?
Ah. Them riding from town, heading for trail to Stockton with two other fellas.
Yeah, we'll pick up their trail and follow them.
Here, Silver.
You see, steady, big fellow.
Easy, steady, fella.
One, Silver.
Come up, fella.
Burley and his three companions rode out the Stockton Trail to meet the stage on which Jack Fairfield was returning with his foreman. Burley was saying,
hope you hombres are right about the rancher bringing $20,000 in cash.
Well, we heard the cowpoke saying so in the cafe, didn't we, Joe?
Yep. We'll split the cash four ways, Burley. And if you want, we'll head for New Mexico territory.
Where are we going to wait for the stage? Do you have any particular place in mind?
There's some big boulders about 2 miles from town. We'll wait behind them.
We figure the rancher and his foreman will be riding in the coach. Driver and guard will be on a seat. That'll make it four against four. Unless there's more passengers, which isn't likely on that short run.
Luke, you cover the driver and guard.
All right.
We'll take care of the passengers, including the rancher with the cash.
There, the boulders just ahead.
Good. We shouldn't have long to wait. It's almost noon now. Come on, get him.
Get him, get him, get him, get him.
A short distance away, the stagecoach creaked and bumped along the trail toward Pecos. Jack Fairfield and his foreman, Tex, sat in the coach.
Tex was saying.
I'm sure glad I don't have to ride one of these contraptions off of Mr. Fairfield. It sure is tough riding.
A little bouncing around will do you good, Tex. You'll appreciate that roan I gave you a lot more.
I sure will. Don't see why we didn't ride horseback in the first place.
Now you forget the pony cart that's lashed on top of this stage, Tex. I promised Sally I'd get her one, and I didn't want to wait for it to be shipped. Decided to take the stage and bring it back with me.
Oh, yeah, I did forget. Man alive, she go loco when she sees that. You sure are good to her, boss.
You and the hands spoil her far more than I do. But she's worth it.
Yep, she sure is. We'll soon be coming to our... Holy mackerel, look, outlaw!
Oh,
by Jiminy, I'll
get... Hold your fire, Tex. You're like sitting ducks inside this old rattle trap. Anyhow, we have nothing to lose, and the stage isn't carrying valuables.
Four of them, boss.
Luke, you cover that driver and guard.
Right, I got him covered.
Julia, keep your guns holstered and get out.
Come on, Tex.
Now stand together with your hands up. We got you covered.
We're reaching high, mister.
Get their wallets, Whiskers.
Right. Yeah, I got them.
Open them, Whiskers.
Right. Hey, only a few paper dollars in each of them.
What?
I thought you said one of them had 20,000 in cash.
Yeah, he's tricking us. Search him, Burley.
Keep him covered.
Yeah.
Hey. Nothing in their pockets in the way of cash.
Which one of you is Jack Fairfield?
I am.
Jack Fairfield?
That's right. And the 20,000 you're after was deposited in the Stockton Bank. I'm not fool enough to carry it with me.
You're lying. You hid it someplace when you saw us coming. Now, where is it?
I already told you.
By thunder, I say you lie.
If I wasn't covered, you wouldn't dare say that, mister.
Tell me where it really is or I'll drill you.
It's in the bank.
Why, you sneaking polecat. I'll...
Hold it, Luke! Hey, why did Burley jump in front of Fairfield and take your bullet, Luke?
The fool. I'll get Fairfield anyway.
Drop that gun!
Hey. Oh, my leg! Look, mashed hombre and an Indian. Oh, Whiskers, hurry up. Shoot, shoot.
Yeah, I'll get that mask on, Bray.
Hold it.
Mister, if you two came to rob us...
We're not outlaws.
Well, in spite of that mask, we have to thank you for what you did. I don't know who you are, but you sure came...
By golly, I saw him in action before. He's the Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger? I've heard of you and your friend... We're grateful, mister.
By thunder, all four of the outlaws are wounded. In fact, this one here looks like he's dead.
He's the one who saved my life.
Saved your life?
Yes. He jumped in front of me and took the bullet when the one over there fired at me. This is my foreman, Tex.
Howdy.
I'm Jack Fairfield.
Oh, yes. Well, Tex, if you'll cover those outlaws, Tonto will bandage their wounds while I look after the one who saved Mr. Fairfield.
Right. I'll get the guns and watch him.
This man is alive, but unconscious. But I'm sure he'll be all right. I'll loosen his collar.
What's that around his neck?
Gold chain and locket. Oh, wait. I've seen this before. A little girl. Your adopted daughter, Sally, wore it.
Yes. If anything's happened to... Hold on. That's not the one Sally wears. Hers is brightly shined. His is dull-looking.
Well, look here. The same picture's inside.
Her real father was an outlaw, went to prison. He had a similar locket. This man must be Sally's father, Burley Scott.
Has he ever met you?
Never, but he did save my life. I'll have him taken to my ranch at once and get a doctor.
Good. We'll tie up the other three and ask the driver and guard to take them onto the sheriff's office after they leave Scott at your place.
Later, in a bedroom at the Bar F Ranch, Burley opened his eyes slowly and looked up to see Jack Fairfield with a masked man and Indian bending over him.
Where am I? How did I
get... I'm Jack Fairfield, remember? You saved my life, Burley.
You know who I am?
Yes.
And Sally?
Sally doesn't know, Burley.
Oh, she must never know. She talked to me yesterday. Said her father was brave. Died a hero. Hey, that mask, who's...
He's a trusted friend, Burley. I don't know why you did what you did, but I sure am grateful.
Hesitatingly, Burley told of his visit to the ranch and of his talk with Sally. He said he had decided Sally was better off as she was and had intended to leave the territory. Then he said...
I suppose now when I get better, I'll go back to prison.
Burley, I'm going to try to have you put on probation in my charge. Then if you want to, you'll come to work for me. You'll be right here with Sally from now on.
Why, I don't know what to say. I reckon that it helped me go straight seeing her so happy.
Wait a minute. Sally, honey, come in a minute.
All right, Daddy Jack. I knew the masked man and Indian were here. Scotty, you're hurt. Oh, Scotty.
Your friend Scotty is going to be well soon, Sally. Then he's going to work here. Would you like that?
Oh, yes. I like Scotty a lot. I'll be your nurse, too.
Oh, I like that, Sally.
Poor Scotty. There.
Gosh, Well, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. I must be getting a cold.
See? Now you don't look sad. You're smiling, Scotty. I asked Mrs. Atkins who was in here, and she said a man who saved Daddy Jack's life. And then I saw it was you. You're brave, just like my real father was.
Sally, honey, it was worth taking a bullet to hear you say that.
Come, Sally. Scotty needs rest now. And after that, I suppose you and Mrs. Atkins will smother him with attention.
Well, Mr. Fairfield, if Sally could sit here a while and maybe hold my hand...
May I, Daddy Jack? May I?
Of course, honey. That's just what your daddy wants you to do. We'll be back later.
Adios, Scotty, and good luck always. Goodbye, Sally.
No, wait. You made a promise. You said you'd tell me why you wore that mask the next time we met. Remember?
Yes, I remember. Oh, perhaps Mr. Fairfield will tell you for me after we leave.
I'll be glad to. Goodbye, sir.
Adios. Come on, Tonto.
Goodbye. Come back soon. Now, Daddy Jack, tell me.
Sally, he wears that mask because he helps keep law and order in the West and tries to set things right for other people. He does those things because he loves his fellow men and he loves his country. It's his wish that nobody know who he really is. But folks out this way, liking and respecting him for his courage and kindness, call him the Lone Ranger.
A feature of the Lone Ranger Incorporated, created by George W. Trendle, produced by Trendle Campbell Muir Incorporated, and directed by Charles D. Livingston. Tonight's drama was written by Dan Beatty.
This will about do it for this edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Hope you guys enjoyed the programming as much as I did. And to take us the rest of the way, why don't we switch it back to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and my good friend, Rob Hancock.
Thank you, Mike, for playing these wonderful programs. I'm Rob Hancock, inviting you to join us again next week at this very same time for another edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Until then, so long for now.